Emily Elizabeth, and I'm the host of the What Fulfills You podcast, a show for and about individuals always seeking to be their best selves. On this show, we talk all about building the mindset, finding the right careers, creating meaningful relationships, and so much more. Welcome to the What Fulfills You podcast. Friends, welcome back to another episode of the What Fulfills You podcast. My name is Emily Elizabeth. I'm your host. And on today's episode, we have on the co-founders of WeNatal, Ronit and Vita. They turned their painful experiences with multiple miscarriages into a mission to shift the fertility conversation from anxiety to empowerment. They developed the first functional prenatal supplement with targeted formulas for both women and men, which is also now trusted by Dr. Mark Hyman as the best prenatal on the market. This conversation was very expansive. We talked about all things from partner selection, fertility, understanding the nuances and how science has evolved, a lot of insights for women in their 20s and 30s navigating all the things in life. This conversation was so incredible. And just for the record, this was actually also a re-recording. So this was the second time we recorded this conversation. So you'll probably hear a few times where I mentioned that something was brought up before, and that was just very natural to me because we did previously talk about it. But this conversation was still so organic, natural, and curious driven. And with that being said, let's welcome Ronit and Vita to the podcast. Well, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast again. Guys, this is actually a re-recording. I feel like it's relevant to share that, but hey, that's life. I would love to just dive into the story of how you two met before you got into business, like the friendship and even what you were doing before WeNatal.
Yeah, so we met close to 20 years ago at our corporate career at Nike. We were both young.
She's making
single.
Us sound really old.
I know. We started when we were 10, just so
you know. Okay. Are you serious?
No.
Oh, I was like, wait.
I'm trying not to age us.
That's,
you know,
so funny.
But we were like young, in our young careers. We were literally at the beginning of our corporate careers, and met and had like a lot of similar interests and just became best friends. We were hitting the LA dating scene.
Yeah.
We were going to events together. We went to the Grammys together. We just had so many fun life experiences, and we always knew we probably wanted to work together one day.
Yeah.
We just assumed it would probably be in marketing or business, the worlds that we came from. And so we went on to kind of get married around the same time. And when it came to about, you know, 8 years ago, I'd say when we were like, both of us were married, we were thinking about having kids. I was running global events at Nike with impeccable precision. I mean, like, thinking through every detail that an athlete would have to do to have the best experiences, races for thousands of people, and ensuring every detail was thought through and prepped for the best possible outcome. And so the ironic part was when I was like thinking about getting pregnant and having kids with my husband, I just thought we're young and like healthy enough, we should just start trying. There was literally zero prep.
Wow.
And so I did get pregnant and went in for, you know, a routine checkup past my first trimester. Mm-hmm. I was already past the first trimester where you're told you're safe and you could tell everybody, told all the parents, told all my coworkers. Mm-hmm. And at that routine checkup, I saw my doctor's face just like drop. Mm. The room went silent. And he shared the words that no soon-to-be parent wants to hear. And he just looked at me and said, I'm so sorry. There's no heartbeat.
Wow.
And that moment stopped us dead in our tracks. We were devastated, shocked, didn't know it could happen, didn't even know it was a possibility, thought we were past the safe zone of when we could tell people. And literally, when I was bawling in his office trying to ask for what happened, he said, you know, it's just very common. And basically handed me a brochure, told us to try again when we're ready, and sent us back through this waiting room of beautiful glowing bellies.
Wow.
And I cried so hard on the way home. I remember my jaw ached. I was distraught on what it could be and thought through the stress at work, anything I ate, a workout, and literally the caffeine. It could have been any of those things. But we were never given a real answer. And lucky for me, my best friend was Ronit. She was working alongside Dr. Mark Hyman. So she had left Nike to go work in the functional medicine space. And she started going deep with me. She's like, have you thought about checking your labs? And I said, they're all coming out normal. And she's like, optimal is sometimes not within normal, right? Like it could, you could be normal, but you want to like make sure everything's in the best possible shape.
Right.
Lo and behold, I did get the testing she recommended. I found out I had issues with my thyroid. I have Hashimoto's. By finding out that and a clean diet and resources and education and supplementation, I went on to have my healthy baby girl,
wow,
Dahlia, who's now 8. And I thought the nightmare was over. And then fast forward to spring of 2020 amidst COVID chaos, we were trying for our seconds and I went to another routine checkup for the same shocking results. And no answer is just, I'm so sorry, I had another miscarriage. Literally the only thing that was different this time is a week later, Roni called me and the same exact thing happened to her.
Wow.
So there we were, two best friends, zero satisfying answers, and she had the perfect prenatal care routine. And that's when we knew something was up.
And in my case, I was shocked because I had my first daughter at the age of 38, naturally with no complications. And here I was at my second pregnancy. I was 41.
Mm-hmm.
I got pregnant easily. And I had this miscarriage, but I was like, Miss Healthy, working in like the wellness space, doing all the wellness things for years and years and years, and I couldn't believe it. So when I asked my doctor, what could I do to optimize my health? What could this have been? Like, why did this happen? Mm-hmm. She said, there's nothing you could do. It's just your age and keep trying.
That is, I was actually going to ask that. That is such a traditional answer, right?
And it's dismissive and yes. It doesn't give you hope and yep. It's like it doesn't empower you. I mean, so like, first of all, a big PSA to your audience, mm-hmm. is even if something is common and even if you know, your doctor says there's nothing you could do, there's pretty much always something that you could do. And we're living proof of that.
Yeah.
And so I decided not to listen to my doctor and I started to do the research on my own.
Mm.
And I learned something that shocked me, that 50% of miscarriages happen because of male factor sperm quality.
Mm-hmm.
And here we were blaming ourselves, scrutinizing every little thing that we did, from like going on an airplane to working too hard,
yeah.
to, you know, whatever it may be. And it could have been because of our husband's sperm quality, which, by the way, they were just going about their lives, business as usual, doing their thing, drinking, smoking.
Right.
And so for us, what we decided to do is focus on this incredible window of opportunity called trimester zero. Mm-hmm. We all know about your first trimester, your second, third, but there is a trimester that's probably the most important trimester for your child's entire life. And that's the 3 to 6 months before you get pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
So that's called trimester zero. And what we did as two couples is we committed to 3 months at minimum of trimester zero before trying to have a baby again. And that meant for us leveling up our supplement game, movement, putting our husbands on a supplement, which mm-hmm. ended up becoming the foundation of our men's prenatal.
Mm-hmm.
For them, no bad habits, no, you know, no alcohol, no toxins.
Right.
I think there are also like a lot of behaviors that are legal and common, but they're not optimal for fertility.
Yep.
So everybody needs to hear that. And I think like on the men's side, we learned that men have this unique ability to regenerate sperm, and that every 3 months they essentially have a new batch of sperm, and that sperm is influenced by their diet and lifestyle and environment.
Mm-hmm.
So we committed to these 3 months, and 3 months later on my first try, I got pregnant with Emma, who's now almost 5.
Wow.
And I gave birth to her at the age of 42.
Wow.
So I also want your audience to know that it's not too late, that if you're over 35, you're not geriatric,
yeah.
and that there is always something that you could do to optimize your health
mm-hmm.
and your fertility. And that age is not the only factor when it comes to natural fertility.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of the genesis of where and why we created WeNatal, because we had our two, oh, I forgot to mention, Vita also had her kind of like positive outcome. 3 months after me, she got pregnant with Davina.
Yeah.
So our two little ones are best friends. And we had our essentially experiment of two couples that did all the right things and it worked. And now, 3.5 years after launching WeNatal, we have over 30,000 families that are on a regular basis DMing us, emailing us, stopping us on the street saying, this is my WeNatal baby. I got 6 embryos and without WeNatal, I got 0. I got pregnant naturally when when I was told that I had unexplained infertility.
Yeah.
So we are very passionate and excited about everything preconception and trimester zero and male factor fertility. So we talk about that 24/7.
Which I love, as we previously talked about, because I think even in conversations I'm having with friends right now, like we're all in our mid late 20s mostly, and there's 100% there's this idea that, okay, maybe we start to have to think about it. We maybe have to, you know, everyone's almost like a little too anxious about it, primarily because we've been fed that narrative, the typical narrative that, okay, when you get to 34, 35 or whatever age in your mid 30s, it's harder. Or, you know, even like the toxic part of the internet will say like women have lost their worth at that point because their fertility is less, right? And it's funny because I loved talking about that with you guys before, because that is really a big topic for like this like younger millennial and then Gen Z generation who's like growing up on the internet. And it's like we're seeing all those conversations and we don't know which one's really true. And I think this is really eye-opening because yes, like most of the burden has been on women for so long, right? And that actually makes me curious. The first thing I was thinking was, did either of you ever have limiting beliefs about your age and fertility or opportunity to become pregnant? Like, I can imagine that might have come about. And if so, like, I can speak for myself. I've always wanted to have children more close to my mid-30s. Mm-hmm. And even when I talk about that now, like when I said that in my early 20s, no one said anything. But now that I say that in my late 20s, people are saying, well, you know, it's going to be harder, right? And of course, I notice the first thing I observe is the mental aspect, because at that point, it's all like mental. I know all this information given what I do in podcasting. I interview people. I know it. I personally listen to even Dr. Hyman as well. Like I know a lot of information, and I know like a lot of these things very much boil down to your habits, your way of living, how well you take care of your own health. So I'm really aware of all that. But even that mental like block of, oh, but this person said this, and it kind of gets planted in your head. And that's what happens to all of us girls. And so I'm curious if you guys had to navigate that on the mental side. How was that? Because I think that's a big one for a lot of women, even though we might know this statistically.
This episode sponsored by Apollo Neuro. Having problems getting a good night's sleep? Apollo Neuro may be the help your body needs. Apollo Neuro is a wearable designed to calm your nervous system so you can fall asleep faster and sleep deeper without medication or side effects. It works by sending gentle, silent vibrations through your wrist that signal safety to your body, like a hug for your nervous system. The result? Fewer wake-ups, deeper sleep, and mornings where you actually feel rested. It's not just a sleep tracker. Apollo actively helps you regulate your body, and Smart Vibes AI automatically personalizes the experience for sleep, calm, focus, and recovery. It's scientifically backed, with clinical trial participants gaining up to 60 minutes of sleep a night. Try it risk-free for 30 days. Visit apolloneuro.com/audio and take $99 off today.
This episode sponsored by Apollo Neuro.
Having problems getting a good night's sleep? Apollo Neuro may be the help your body needs. Apollo Neuro is a wearable designed to calm your nervous system so you can fall asleep faster and sleep deeper without medication or side effects. It works by sending gentle, silent vibrations through your wrist that signal safety to your body, like a hug for your nervous system. The result? Fewer wake-ups,
deeper sleep and mornings where you actually feel rested. It's not just a sleep tracker. Apollo actively helps you regulate your body, and Smart Vibes AI automatically personalizes the experience for sleep, calm, focus, and recovery. It's scientifically backed, with clinical trial participants gaining up to 60 minutes of sleep a night. Try it risk-free for 30 days. Visit apolloneuro.com/audio and take $99 off today.
I mean, of course, as women, we navigate these things on a daily basis. When I was single, it was like, when are you going to get married? Mm-hmm. When I got married, when are you going to have kids? When I had my first kid, when are you going to have your second kid? Mm-hmm. It's literally society is constantly pushing you. And for me, I just want to say I had my first at 38, my second at 42, and I love being an older mom. I think there's so much value in that for me. Now, there's also value in being a young mom. Everybody has their own path.
Yes.
Did I have my limiting beliefs? I would say for me, I never did. And I'll share one example with you. Before I met my husband, around the age of 34, mm-hmm. I went to the doctor and I said to her, you know, I wonder if I should freeze my eggs mm-hmm. because, you know, it's so hard to date here in LA mm-hmm. and I just don't know, you know, when I'm going to meet my guy. And so we did this test and she checked something called AMH, mm. anti-Mullerian hormone, which basically is a hormone that is an indicator of how many eggs you have in reserve. Mm. So we're born with all the eggs we're ever going to have. And every month your egg count goes down. Mm. And that's part of just like aging.
Yeah.
And so my egg reserve was very low. It was 0.5. Under 2 is considered low.
Okay.
And I remember thinking to myself, okay, this is one data point. I'm going to take this information, good to know, but I'm going to set it aside because I know that my mom had my little sister when she was 37. I know that I'm living an extremely healthy lifestyle. Mm-hmm. At that point in my life, I was so into wellness, eating clean, doing CrossFit, removed my house and from all of the like toxic products. I was really like taking care of myself. I also looked young. I mm-hmm. felt young. Mm-hmm. And so I just thought to myself, I'm not going to worry about this. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you could see with my outcomes that I didn't have issues in getting pregnant. And I think a big conversation is about, yes, your egg count goes down as you age, mm-hmm. but focusing and shifting your reference from egg count to egg quality can really make a big difference because at the end of the day, a successful pregnancy will happen mm-hmm. if you have good egg quality and good sperm quality.
Mm-hmm. I'm really glad that you shared that because I actually, when I started to learn more about this, which is like great timing for me because I think realistically, the average, you know, 28-year-old girl like myself, the average 28-year-old wouldn't even know the aspect of importance of egg quality, even if you freeze your eggs. Mm-hmm. Like I didn't even know that until earlier this year. Like I think naturally all we know is like, oh yeah, freeze your eggs. And that's like a good insurance policy, right? And then so I actually asked my friend who recently freezed her eggs, like, and I know her intention, but I think also like she did it in like that, that classic approach of, okay, I'm going to do this because I think it's the right time. And she's actually only 27. So I was like, okay, like that's kind of got my wheels turning. I'm like, wait, shit, am I like behind? Like, am I supposed to do this now too? If I, you know, and then, yeah, again, like just through this podcast, through getting to interview people, I learned these nuances and the importance of that. So I'm glad that you shared that aspect of egg quality.
Yeah. And I just want to say in regards to freezing your eggs, yeah. fertility doctors say that the sweet spot for mm-hmm. freezing your eggs is actually the age 32.
I heard that.
So
yeah.
You have time.
Yeah.
And if you do end up going down that route of freezing your eggs, which is not a bad idea, like it's a great insurance policy, but you have to treat that process as if mm-hmm. you are trying to get pregnant.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, even if you freeze 20 eggs, if their quality is not good quality, it's not gonna serve you.
Right.
So I think that's a very important thing for your audience to know is if you're freezing your eggs, you have to do all the things that we talk about in trimester zero, including reducing toxins from your household, eating clean, taking a prenatal, taking extra stuff that can improve your egg quality, like CoQ10 and NAC. So it's like, it's a big investment mentally, emotionally, and financially. And if you do it, you have to do it right.
Yeah.
And we prep for so many things in life, right? Like for our wedding, some people spend 6 months to a year getting in shape, getting the tan, planning the wedding. I know you did. I was there. You were beautiful. They do for like their nurseries. They'll spend 6 months ideating on their beautiful nursery. And even like things like sports. If we sign up for a marathon, typically we're not just going to sign up and run.
Mm-hmm.
A marathon is 26.2 miles. I've done one. It's hard. It's painful. The way to do it is to actually sign up.
Yeah.
Get the training plan, get the right gear for yourself, the apparel, the footwear, find, you know, nutrition plans at work, and maybe work with a coach to get there and get on race day and be confident that you're putting your best foot forward.
Mm-hmm.
I've done one with training. I've done one without, and I could speak to how painful the non-training version is. And so the reality is you could do anything in life without the prep.
Yeah.
But the prep is what makes a difference.
Yeah.
And I will say, like, Vita has a good point in regards to the prep, because your audience, they might not be ready to have a baby right now or even in the next year.
Mm-hmm.
But the one who runs a marathon, who has been running for years, who has been in shape for years, mm-hmm. their prep is going to be a lot easier.
Mm-hmm.
So to your audience, it's never too early to start working on your fertility because all of the things that we talk about will serve you not only for your fertility, but your health, your longevity, and overall wellness and happiness.
What about the men's side, which obviously is, I think, so important, because naturally, or not really naturally, but I think more from a societal perspective, it's always been focused on the woman and what she's doing or what she's not doing to help this fertility process, right? And like you mentioned earlier, obviously 50% of the outcome is also from the men's contribution, right? Can you touch more on impacts of, let's say, like their age, for example, and their health? And because I mention age, because, for example, I've heard a lot of guys be like, oh, I have all the time in the world, right? And they're like, no, the age thing is only really for women. Like, there's like their fertility stuff starts to decline after 30. And I have gone into debates about this and I'm like, okay, like, you know, like, wow, like, way to be super cocky. They're like, yeah, I can have a kid when I'm 50. And it's like, I'm like, well, not that you can't, but like, I think it's also extremely ignorant to say that without even knowing a lot of the stats and also the impact of the male sperm in the contribution to potential miscarriage, for example.
We agree,
yeah.
First of all. So there is responsibility on both sides. So they, yeah. I think, yes, you're right. Hundreds and thousands of years, the societal pressure has been on women because we're the ones carrying. But when I literally remember where I was the day Ronit called me to say that men are 50% of pregnancy loss and pregnancy health, I was like stopped dead in my tracks. It was the most intuitive thing. Here we are. It's 2020. We are so advanced in a million ways.
Mm-hmm.
But how is it that literally I had two losses and no one even asked my husband a single question?
Mm.
Not what he was doing, not what he was, nothing. Mm. He wasn't even like looked at.
Yeah.
And so it's not only that they can help, there's so much they can do. And yes, while it's true, Ronit mentioned, women have the number of eggs we have, and every month, you know, throughout our life, it's slowly gonna decrease. Men have this superpower where they're regenerating sperm every second of the day. Every second, about 1,500 sperm are made. So in 3 months, they completely have a new batch of sperm.
Mm-hmm.
And while it's true, they can have children into later life, and we see celebrities, you know, having kids in their 80s, the reality is you're not like looking under the cover to see, do those kids are more apt with the paternal side having a advanced age? The children are have the possibility of having more chromosomal abnormalities and possibly ailments.
Yeah.
And so while they can have it, wouldn't you want to have the best and the healthiest children?
Right.
And so the debate is, yes, they're making sperm throughout their life. they can dramatically improve the quality of sperm with that 3-month prep. Mm-hmm. But we have seen the research show that as the paternal age increases, there mm-hmm. are the ability to have children with, sadly, more challenges.
In terms of getting your partners to understand this, right? Like, I can imagine that obviously it takes open-mindedness. It takes being growth-minded as well, in the sense that, okay, yeah, like, this is also, like, I'm contributing in this way, or that I can also help improve the outcome, right? Can you share the process of going through that with your partners, and also even going back to thinking about attributes that maybe you even saw early on when you, in the first few years of dating, that kind of led to them being that way when you went through a process like that? Like, that's something I'm also always intrigued about, which is that I do believe that a lot of us girls who are in the dating phase, we can see some of these, if not a lot of these, attributes that would play a big role in big decisions later on, mm-hmm. which is, I recently had a clinical psychologist on the podcast who talked all about mate selection and, like, the impact of these, like, daily moments. Like, you can actually look back and see, let's say, anyone that maybe chose not the right partner, they were able to go back and see, like, I saw that 10 years ago, or I saw that 5 years ago, right? And I also think that must also be the case with something like positive, which is, like, you know, co-creating and teamwork of, all right, we're going to have this child together. How do we do this? Versus a guy maybe being more egotistical, or vice versa, like, just teamwork not being able to happen, which I believe also is typically seen in the first few years of dating.
Yeah. I actually have a fun story on this one. So the guy, Renroni will laugh. the guy I dated right before my husband, and I was like, right, I was dating in LA for a good 10 years, mm-hmm. you know, 50 first dates, I call it. Like, I would know within the first date if they even remotely have qualities that I would, like, consider a second date.
Yeah.
So I'd say the guy that I met right before my husband, we met at the gym. On paper, he was, like, everything I thought I wanted. He mm-hmm. worked out. He ate super healthy. He had a great job. But there was some red flags. There was things like, maybe wasn't as close to his family, mm-hmm. wasn't as nurturing towards me or kids. So there were some things, and finally ended up that we were, like, not the right fit. And when I met my husband, I tell this story a lot. If I had met him 3 or 4 years ago, I think I would have completely dismissed him. He's really fun. He's goofy. He doesn't work out. Like, I was so into wellness that I loved, like, eating healthy, working out. He eats whatever he wants, not into wellness, loves to drink, loves to partake in these bad habits that we've talked about.
Yeah.
But he was such a good person, and he was so close to his family. Mm-hmm. And so I often say that if I hadn't had those 50 horrible first dates, you know, before that, what I thought I wanted and what I actually ended up prioritizing was someone that was a family man, that was mm-hmm. close to his parents, that loved kids. I could see every time we got together at family occasions, he was having the most fun, more than the kids were. And so where I thought I wanted someone who was like me, I ended up actually going for someone completely opposite, but our foundations were very similar. We knew we wanted a family. And so it's funny, I think timing's everything. And I think if I had met him even before the last boyfriend, I may have not appreciated just the simple, fun-loving guy that he was. I would have dismissed him as goofy or serious or all those things. But all those other experiences kind of led me to see really just the good in him. And that outweighed someone to work out with me and someone to make me quinoa and healthy salads. Like, that's not him.
Right.
I have to do that for myself. Yeah. But he is a fun-loving, and Ronit knows all the guys I dated. But I just think it's an important PSA, because also the experiences lead up to who you're going to end up with. And some things outweigh what you think you want on paper is not always maybe the best partner.
Absolutely. And I think that's why I take things like this really with a lot of awareness, because yes, I get to sit in this seat and talk about it on, you know, a podcast, but it does make me think, like, 10 years from now when I'm 38, like, what is going to be really important, right? Like, does this person exude teammate qualities mm-hmm. of, if we're in the dumps, like, something is not going well and we need to pull each other up as a team, could I see that person doing that? Like, I think those are things that we can actually spot, like, pretty early on.
Those are the two true tests. When you have fun and in the honeymoon phase, it's like easy to love everybody. It's like fun.
Yeah.
It's actually in those hard moments that you really see people's true colors, in my opinion.
Yeah. And I think also another key piece for me was like finding somebody that has that growth mindset and somebody that is willing to, you know, do the work and always grow, and not somebody that's kind of like stagnant and set in their ways. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, when it comes to our cases specifically and like getting our partners to make the changes, they were willing to do everything and anything because the loss was their loss too. But they also trusted us. They also knew that we did the homework and that they can like listen to us. Mm-hmm. And if we say, here's what you need to do, they did it. Yeah. So I think that's a big piece too. And we see that a lot with WeNatal. I think, first of all, any reel that we ever post about men's health, sperm quality, always has like the most amount of shares, and we know it's like the women sending it to their partners or husbands. And so there are like many ways to like influence your partner, like once you're in it. Mm-hmm. And also like what we always say to women and couples is like, you don't have to be on this supplement forever and do all of these things forever. It just takes 3 months. And, you know, until you get pregnant. But a lot of times the men start feeling so good once they start taking care of themselves that they just stay with these like habits. You know, it's such a gift to them to be able to, you know, influence them to make these changes. And all of a sudden they have mental clarity and focus and their libido is back and their hair is growing and they're like fully on board.
Yeah. Did you ever notice, well, I guess I know earlier too, you mentioned that for you on your second try, that was when you had the miscarriage?
For
you. Mm-hmm. So did that make you wonder like what was different about that time around because you already had some of those practices in place?
Yeah, I mean, I went into it like not even thinking for a second that there could be like a miscarriage happening.
Right,
like
right.
I was shocked. I remember at that appointment that I went to with my husband when we found out that there was no heartbeat, he was like kind of stressed. And I was like, why are you stressed? Like, we're good, you know? And I was shocked. And I literally couldn't believe it. And that's why Vita and I are so vocal about talking about our losses, because people should know that 1 in 4 pregnancies end in a miscarriage. Mm-hmm. And they should go into it, you know. I know that like there used to be this like idea of like, don't tell anybody you're pregnant until you reach your second trimester. But like, you should share with your friends, because then if you do have a loss, people will be there to support you, you know? And I think more and more in this age of Instagram and TikTok, people are talking about it more. And I think that it's really important for people to know that they're not alone, because when it happened to me and I started sharing, I realized that it happened to so many people around me. But then what gave me hope was that my friend Lillian, for instance, had 3 miscarriages, but then had 3 kids. So to hear that like happy endings, to hear what people did to get to their like rainbow babies is something that is gave me the hope and made me understand, even though I was 41 and society and the medical system was telling me you're too old to have a baby, I was like, okay, I could do this. And I did. So I think it's having and holding on to that hope is really important. And that's why Vita and I talk about our stories. We always share about like mindset and how that's important for, you know, your fertility journey, and never losing hope and never taking the answers that are given to you as like just fact.
Mm-hmm. I was going to ask about that too, about mindset, because I think that's a big component I talk about on this podcast, which is that so much of what we plant in our head, we end up creating as our part of our reality because we're just feeding that into our mind. And that's why I kind of mentioned earlier that mental aspect of
when someone tells a woman like myself, oh, you're going to be too old at X age, right? And that can slip into your mind, and then you start to like slightly believe it, and then that kind of manifests bigger, and then you get stressed, and then your body feels it, and then like you're just in a whole cycle of like you're not even yourself, right? Can you share a little bit like about even whether it's just you individually or you and your partner on how you also created a solid mental space for that process, especially for okay, like we're going through this, but here's how we're going to shift our mindset, you know, and think more, not just positively because it's a good thing, but actually like applying that into your daily life.
Yeah, it wasn't easy. I will tell you, especially when I had the miscarriage before I had kids, the thoughts that come to your mind are, will I ever have kids? Mm. What's wrong with me?
Yeah.
I definitely had my fair share of self-blame and doubt. And yes, you learn that there's always going to be voices in society telling you, even when I went for that miscarriage, and I remember doing blood work after, and the nurse is like, oh, well, you're geriatric. And I was 35. I was just at the beginning of it.
Right.
And so, yes, these things stay with you. It's hard. What I learned, actually not within my first miscarriage, but with our second, our friend Lillian, who's actually the author of the We Needle Journal, really taught me my words are powerful. She really taught me how to find gratitude in just the simple things of every day, and that slowly over time, it's a muscle. Mm-hmm. And even if today it's just that the sun is shining or my cup of coffee, like small, you can increase over time, and overall that changes your physiology altogether. And there are numerous examples of people in my own circle who are told they can never have kids, who got surrogates, and then once they had their baby, had one naturally, or were told unexplained infertility once they had, you know, a baby through IVF and thought there was no other chance, they had one. And so when there's so much more research coming out about the mind-body connection.
Yeah.
And that's also why we came out with a journal to help and exude gratitude in people's daily lives, is because we could give you the best supplementation, but if your mind is in that super negative spiral, like you mentioned, it affects your body, and your body can't prioritize conception, because quite literally the stress is doing to us, it's prioritizing the blood to go to our limbs to run, like as if we're being chased from a bear or living in famine. And so it's not within your organs. It's not going to help you prioritize conception.
Yeah.
And I know it's like lame advice to say, like when you're in it, to be like, don't stress, just be chill. But you have to find what works for you.
Yeah.
Walks helped me.
Mm-hmm.
I was not a meditator. I could never shut off my mind, but I found other things that work, like being in nature, like talking to a friend. Community has more and more research of like creating your village, and like Ronit said, for the ups and the downs, you're gonna want your like close group of friends to support you through all of it. You know, finding ways to improve the micro acts that I can take control of in my house. Yes, we live in a toxic soup. Yes, there's plastics everywhere, but what I can control. And so I found some solace in cleaning up items in my home, clean air, clean water, you know, cleaning my beauty products or kitchen, you know, items. And so I found my type A control freak. I tried to channel it in ways that would like better our family and set the foundation for a world I want to welcome a baby into.
Yeah.
And having like the peace of mind and knowing I will have my baby. It's hard, but if you keep telling yourself, if you do, you know, write it, if you believe it, like it's gonna eventually trick your body into like believing it too. And so the mind is such a powerful tool, and it's like a muscle. We have to train it just like we would working out in the gym.
Absolutely. What was that process for you for I guess especially when you were, since that was you were navigating that for baby number two? Was there a do you remember if there was like a difference in approach or like any mental shifts, that especially because that was your second time?
My, I would say like the thing that kind of like helped me the most during that time was I read this book called Spirit Babies. And the premise of the book is that we all have our spirit babies that are there waiting for us for when the time is right. And I just believe that there was a spirit baby waiting for me and that, you know, you never understand God's timing. But when you look at it in retrospect, you're like, okay, I could see why this and this happened. And, you know, when Vita and I look at our pregnancy losses, of course, like in the moment, it was the most devastating thing we've ever gone through. Like for me, it was the first time I understood what trauma is. But I'm so grateful for that loss. It was painful and it was, you know, devastating, but I'm so grateful for that soul that came into my life for that short time, because that is what led us to launch WeNatal. And without that soul, we wouldn't have had all of these WeNatal babies that would stop us on the street with their, like, or send us their ultrasound photos. And so I think this is just like a PSA to your audience to like understand that, like, okay, things might not work exactly like how you planned it, but there is a greater plan that is working for you.
Yeah.
So believing that is kind of what like helped me get through it.
Have you guys used that mindset towards the balance between being founders and mothers and wives? I know we've touched on that before, but just I think that's something that I find super inspirational for all women listening, and especially for those who want to be able to embody more than just one role and one identity in their life, and to be able to feel encouraged and empowered when hearing and seeing other examples like yourselves. Can you share a little bit about that in terms of even like the past, where like this is, I feel like that's where I would speak on where I'm at right now, where in certain moments I have noticed that on my own, I certainly feel empowered and like proud of like who I am and what I do and my own dreams and ambitions. And there could be, and I had a friend that also experienced this as well, which is a guy comes in the picture and makes you feel like you are almost kind of wrong for having the dreams, or maybe they feel in their way, maybe they're insecure or intimidated by you. And so there's just little nuances that kind of make you feel down. And then on the flip side, you're maybe with the right person and they make you feel empowered and also love that you are their, you know, mom to their kids and also their wife and also a founder, like that kind of thing. Can you touch on that experience?
Yeah. Also, that's how I selected my husband. Also, within those horrible millions of dates I went on, I could tell most guys were like actually turned off, but how into my career I was.
Yeah.
I was like at Nike at the top of my game, thriving, like hanging out with athletes and planning some of the biggest world events. And they literally, like, I think weren't expecting it, weren't into it, and it would end right there. And when I met my husband, he was like my biggest cheerleader, like so into the events I did. He would come, even when we were just dating, he would come support every single one. He got a nickname in our office called the First Lady because he was literally my sidekick, but it was like great. He was truly into it. And I think that also was maybe one of the signs that like I didn't know I wanted, but seeing how supportive he was of my career, which is a huge part of my identity. And that just, you know, once we became entrepreneurs, it was the same thing. Now he's double down on this business. He's our finance guy, but also always trying to give us marketing ideas. I mean, like, but just having the support of someone who knows we work a lot.
Yeah.
And nights, weekends, but he never judges me for it.
Yeah.
He's supportive. And that is so important to our identities, because it wouldn't have worked for me for a guy who wanted me to have one role or wanted me to be a 9-to-5. I'm not that type of person.
Right. And you never felt... It never got to your head when all through all those guys that you were dating that like at any point you didn't come to your mind like, okay, maybe they're right.
I think so. I mean, I think like for me, the thought crosses your mind where it's like, you know, just all these guys don't want like a strong woman type of thing. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, like, great. If they don't want a strong woman, I'm not for you. Yeah. I could say that, like, you know, in retrospect. And I will also say that, like, that is the benefit of meeting someone like later in life. Like, you have your established career. You are who you are. You're not going to change that, you know?
Yeah. And that was, for me, it was a non-negotiable. So it didn't even cross my mind, because it's not like I was going to change myself for them.
Right.
So I was just like, eventually this will work out or it won't. But, like, I'm not going to change who I am or not going to play to be someone else.
Yeah.
to please a guy. That just was not my narrative.
Right, right. Which I asked that specifically too, because I have had conversations with women where they actually notice that friction mentally, where they almost start to go into self-doubt, which I'm sure you guys can imagine that that's common, right? So then for them to hear a story like yours where you're embodying all of these things that you want to be and you have supportive partners in that process, mm-hmm. to them, that's like a wake-up call to a reality that is true, that is out there. And hearing it once or twice is sometimes enough for them to move out of that self-doubt place.
Totally. And listen, I come from a culture where, like, I think we talked about this on our first podcast, our success is really seen as like being married and having kids. And I was already over 30 and not married. And so in the Persian culture, they start to worry about you, you know? And so it is really important to have that strong footing, because you can get swayed by your parents, your aunts and uncles, your, you know, the society. Mm-hmm. And like, my point is that is always going to be there. Even in my career, I remember people that I was mentoring under me, like, well, I did all this and I'm not promoted yet, or I want to make this and I'm not, like, there's always going to be voices and comparisons in your life, at work, at home, people who didn't treat their bodies well and had babies so easily, and then people did everything right and it was hard. Like, there is always going to be a comparison.
Yeah.
How you go inwards is the most important, and kind of you have to like take those as a data point, but it's not everything, and keep it moving.
Yeah.
The more you let the outside voices kind of penetrate, like you said, it will slowly deteriorate your mindset, mm-hmm. and that speaks to your body, and nothing good is happening. And so like the strong foundation, like back to whatever works for you, exercise, eating healthy, community, finding joy, mm-hmm. even if you think you're old. And also put, I would say the important part about the relationship thing, I was starting to feel the pressure towards the end of like, should I just like kind of make it work with one of these guys that like me because I am getting older?
Yeah.
But where is that going to go? Right. You have to think about, like, to your point, not just when it's like you can tolerate it. Things only get harder once you're married, once you have kids, once you're working 24/7, once you're not sleeping because of the kids. Like, you want to be in it with someone who really has your back.
Yeah. Ooh, that's really good. Like, what about when it comes to balancing all three roles? How do you guys personally do that?
Because
I know
no
it
balance.
Looks, I know
there's
it looks no different
balance.
For everyone.
There's no balance. There's no
I know
balance.
It looks different for everyone, and I know also like I always speak about this too, that I don't believe in work-life balance, and it's also that I think work-life integration is really beautiful if you know how to make it benefit you, right? But also, not everyone knows, like, okay, how to know which season of life you bring this one up more, and then vice versa. But even though I can't think of a better word than balance, right, so to speak, how do you guys juggle between all of those?
I mean, I think when you have a lot on your plate, mm-hmm. and a lot of very important things like your kids and your business, and our business is not just it's our purpose. Mm-hmm. And our relationships and our friends and our family, I think a lot of sacrifices end up happening too. Mm-hmm. And you kind of like grow up and you don't waste your time on things or on people that are like not that important to you. Mm-hmm. You don't, you know, waste your time on like, I mean, I don't watch TV here. I mean, here and there, I'll watch, you know, some sort of, you know, season of something. But really, like, Vita and I don't have like a moment in our day, mm-hmm. where we're not being efficient. Mm. And so I think, you know, even Dr. Hyman said, if you want something done, give it to a busy mom. We know that we drop off our kids every day at 8 a.m. at school. We pick them up at 2:40. We have X amount of hours to work, and we are efficient with our time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we're also like very focused on being present parents. And so we are, you know, when we're with our kids, we're with our kids. When we're working, we're working. Mm-hmm. But then do we log on at night after we go to sleep? Of course. I work every single night. Mm-hmm. We work every single Saturday.
Wow.
But, you know, what also helps us in our case is both of our kids, all four of them are like best friends.
Yeah.
So when we were starting WeNatal in the early days, we had this like concept of bestie days, and they were the best days. We would work together all day. Our kids would just play, And it was like fun for everybody.
That's so fun. Well, I mean, and I love, did you guys envision that before you had children by chance? Like, did you ever kind of, I mean, for being sure. best friends for so long and knowing each other for so long, is that something you guys kind of jokingly talked about? Like, oh, imagine this, like when, you know, our kids are five or something like that.
That was the dream for sure. Yeah. I remember actually when I was pregnant, just when she was about to have her first, which ended in miscarriage. But I remember just when I found out I was pregnant, I was like, oh my God, we're going to be on maternity leave together. We're going to go to mommy and me together. We're like literally like in my head, I got so far ahead. And then that loss became so much more, the magnitude was so much bigger because I'd already envisioned having a child with my best friend or kids being the same age. And
right.
it happened on my timeline, not when I envisioned it, right? So it was like my oldest is about a year and a half younger than hers.
Yeah.
But I got there and they're still best friends and it didn't matter. And again, it doesn't always go according to plan, but mm-hmm. we got there and yeah, that was the dream. And it's so awesome to see it now. And also you realize time is your most valuable asset.
Yeah.
It's not money. It's not anything else. And so the time and the energy we put into what we do, mm-hmm. we're very thoughtful about the things we do, what we say yes to. And having a village, the village that I keep mentioning, yeah. is so important. Today, she has a friend doing a pickup. We're always kind of bouncing yeah. with our community, our parents, mm-hmm. everyone's in the
That's
mix.
That's like a very important piece is like having a village and having like a support system that will help you from friends that do pick up and drop off to, you know, play dates or like parents being involved. I mean, my mom lives with me now, yeah. so that's like super duper helpful. Couldn't mm-hmm. have done it without her. It takes a village, and so rely on it. Mm. And, you know, whether it's like hiring help or friends, it's really important to ask for help because you can't do it alone.
Totally. Yeah. How do you pour into yourself as an individual in that process so that, you know, obviously I know that if you don't pour into yourself, it becomes an empty cup. And if you're trying to pour from an empty cup, you're already, you know, yeah. tanked, right? Yeah.
I was going to say lots of coffee, but also, you know, the first few years of founder life, we actually were working 24/7 and had newborns, and it was really hard to forget about ourselves. And yeah. most recently, I'd say about a year ago, we really took a pause and said, this isn't going to work this way. We can't, this is a marathon, not a sprint. Yeah. And so we really slowed down and said, okay, we're going to prioritize what we say yes to. We're going to meal prep. Her sister is an amazing chef who does protein healthy meals for us.
Yeah.
We, you know, like you farm out what you can so yeah. that you could have more time and be present with your kids and we're not spent like, you know, figuring out what's for lunch.
Right.
We have enlisted in wellness rituals like
yeah.
Saunas, workouts. Every now and then I'll partake in a cold bath. Like you realize how good you feel when you do something. It's like after the sauna, I feel amazing. Mm-hmm. And so working those in, we've been really good about our workouts and what works for us. And listen, it's not always easy. Like there are days where we have so much on our plate and getting to that workout is nearly impossible, but mm-hmm. we know that will fuel us for the next few days. And so it really is true. You can't pour from an empty cup. I've tried.
Yeah.
The caffeine runs out at a certain point and you're just like literally on nothing. And so
like yeah. we had a launch yesterday mm-hmm. and the last thing I wanted to do is go to the gym at 9 a.m. where when I was like in the middle of like a million things, but I did it because we have a trainer and yeah. I committed to it and I felt so good after. And by the way, at 10 a.m. when I was done with my workout, like that's fine. Yeah. I like went on with my day. Like nothing happens if you take an hour to work out.
Yeah.
So that's really where we've been in the last year. And it's been like a complete game changer
yeah.
to our mood, to filling our cup really. And yeah. to be able to also like, I don't know. I feel also like we're so much more creative yeah. when you're not in the grind of things.
Oh,
so.
And I used to be a hardcore yes person. Like anyone that invited me anywhere, I would be like, yes, I'm a people pleaser by nature. Mm. And again, later in life, you learn your boundaries because what saying yes to everything was depleting me. I wasn't sleeping enough at night. I was literally burning it at both ends mm. in my corporate career as well. And so that's probably one of the newest things that I've done to have boundaries is like say yes only when like I truly feel called that I can show up and be my best.
Yeah.
And if it is going to be a late night or something, I politely decline and I...
She doesn't do dinners, only like, lunch.
Oh, really?
Rarely.
Oh, wow.
Because it has to be a very, very special, occasion.
Because it like wrecks me the next day. I don't sleep as much. The kids wake me up at like 5 or 6. It's like, it's a whole downward spiral. So unless it's like a milestone.
Yeah.
I'm typically like, and things move. You can ask people to do lunch or brunch instead of dinner and it works.
Yeah.
Or I'll do a very early dinner, like senior 5 p.m. an hour. But again, boundaries, yeah, and like that I feel sense. Better when I have late meals. I don't sleep as well. It's yeah. whole thing.
Okay. Last few questions. When you're thinking of yourselves in your late 20s and early 30s, particularly in the career space, what would you say to your younger selves at that stage of life? And it could be anything. It could be career related. It could also just be personal life related, but something that you wish you had an older sister to tell you at that stage of life.
I would say, like, you're exactly where you need to be.
Yeah.
Because every single career opportunity or job experience, boss you had, whether they were good or bad, all kind of enriches your experience and leads you to be the person that you are. And I think, like, from our perspective now running this company, we're running it exactly as like bosses that we wish we had. And we treat our team the way we wish we were treated. So I think, like, just knowing in your 20s that even if you're like not exactly sure, is this the career I want? Is this job feels, you know, like I'm not fulfilled in this job. It's probably where you have to be, because every experience you grow from and you learn from and you'll evolve as a person.
Yeah, I really like that.
And for me, it's along the same lines, but it's just trusting my gut more. I think I had a lot of internal talk when, you know, with every decision, with every people pleasing moment I said yes to, and just like trusting my gut and going and believing and having certainty in like what you want to do, what you want to say. And yeah, I truly believe everything's in your path for a reason. And every experience, if you look at it, is like, this is happening for me, not to me.
Yeah.
It's a whole mindset shift.
Okay. Wow. No, and that's very powerful too, because I think that's something that I think about a lot, which is that it really comes back to our mindset, right? And how we frame things. One of my favorite questions to ask is, what is one thing you did well in your 20s or 30s that you would do again, and one thing that you would do differently? I think people often ask the classic question, what you would do differently. But I also think that there are also great decisions that we've made that also are just as powerful.
So for me, when I was getting my MBA at USC, my fellow MBA students were going on like a million interviews and networking. And I always thought like the concept of networking was so weird. Like I thought it was so fake. I'm like, just be a normal person and like build relationships. Like what is this like networking, going up to people, exchanging business cards? It was so weird, and I think it's still weird. But anyway, back then I felt a little like, should I be doing that? But I actually trusted my gut, and I didn't apply to work for any company that I wasn't passionate for. And when I was getting my MBA, I was only passionate about one company, and that one company was Nike, and that's the job that I got. So I think, you know, for me, I'm very proud about just understanding that what I wanted to do in life had to be something that I was truly believed in and was truly passionate about.
Yeah.
And I think because I got a job that was probably paying me way less than most MBA students, but I was passionate about it and I loved what I was doing and I learned so much and I was so fulfilled. And then I grew so quickly. And within a few years, I was a VP there. You know, I think it's just like following your passion. And even if you don't exactly know where you're going to go, because then when I wanted to get into wellness, I did something very similar. I invested in a functional medicine course that cost me $10,000. Wow. And I wasn't a doctor, so I was like, most people would be like, why are you taking this course? This course is for doctors. But I was passionate about it.
Yeah.
And then that course led me to having like a really good foundation for when I started working with Dr. Hyman. So it's like, do what you're passionate about, and like the sky's the limit of the outcome for you.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So good. So I think what I did well in part of my younger career was actually being so easy to work with, and the pleasure that I created. Like, you essentially, no matter what job you're in, you're marketing yourself as much as you are the brand that you're working for. And mm-hmm. so people loved working with me. They knew I could get shit done, and that elevated my career. And so that hard work and that hustle actually got me places. Mm-hmm. Now, what I might have done a little differently is had a little bit more boundaries with work. Like, my first 10 years at Nike, I would say I was working nights, weekends. It was my boyfriend. It was my children. Like, yeah. I threw myself in head first.
And wow.
Maybe that was a little unhealthy,
yeah,
but loved what I did. And to your point, when it's like, when you have so much passion, it doesn't feel like work.
Mm-hmm.
And so, similar to Roni, it's following your passions, but also being true to yourself. At mm-hmm. some point, I feel like I did lose my identity in there, and yeah. I should have, you know, had a little bit more boundaries with work. But I do know that the relationships I made and that hard work and hustle mm-hmm. has now transpired in a million different ways. I mean, advisors and people we have now at We Natal were people we used to work with at Nike. And so it comes full circle. And when people know your work ethic, mm-hmm. it will follow you whatever career you go into,
yeah,
or whatever business you mm-hmm. start.
Yeah. Anything you would do differently, you would say?
Just probably maybe those little bit of boundaries.
More
like
boundaries,
I had zero.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. No, I think that's the classic way of people burning out, right?
Yeah. But I think that's nuanced. I think some people show up, and no judgment, it works for them, like new to a job, entry level, and they're like, here are my boundaries. And I kind of believe the opposite. I believe right. when you're establishing your career, it's time to work hard and hustle and show them what you're made of.
Right.
Now, yeah, you don't want to lose yourself, but there is a point in my career where I'm very proud mm-hmm. that I didn't have any, because it showed them that no matter what, I got the job done.
Yeah.
If I had a team, if I had a budget or not, they can count on me. And that's what set the trajectory of my career.
Yeah.
And the people who want to come in and like maybe not give themselves fully, I think it shows in the work.
Yeah. Wow. Wow. Okay. Well, final question. It's something I ask every guest on the show, but in reflection of everything, your life, your family, your career, what would you say fulfills you the most in life?
I'll say community,
mm-hmm.
relationships, friendships. That is also like a huge piece of our careers. Every job I've had, we've always met like the most amazing people mm-hmm. that allowed us to grow. And community is a big part of We Natal. We host a ton of events. We love bringing people together.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, like the definition of like what fulfills me is like having my house full of people and having like a party and having my friends become my other friends and yeah. we're all like best friends and inspiring each other.
Yeah.
So that's it for me.
And same. I think so much of what lights me up is taking care of people I love and mm-hmm. nurturing and planning the details, and whether that's at work or at home or inviting people over. I think it's just that ability to like love and food, like whatever it is, abundance, but also just like nurturing people. That's like
yeah.
what makes me happy.
I think that's the secret, right? Like at the end of the day, like life is about people and connection.
Yeah.
And, mm-hmm. you know, when push comes to shove, like that's what really matters the most above
100%
all things.
100%. Agreed.
Yeah. Amazing. Well, where can everyone find you guys? We Natal, share all the socials and anything you'd like to share.
We Natal, we're at @we_Natal on mm-hmm. social. Our website is wenatal.com. We do have an offer for your community
Amazing.
Where if they subscribe to We Natal, they get a free magnesium, which is Ooh. An epic magnesium with 4 different types that can help you sleep, digest, de-stress.
Mm-hmm.
It's at wenatal.com/whatfulfillsyou.
Amazing.
So they can get that offer there. And then, you know, anybody who has any questions, needs anything, please DM us. We
yeah.
respond. I send voice. I'm a voice note person.
Oh,
so I will respond to you. We love just supporting people and educating them. So we're here for you.
Amazing. Thank you so much. This was so fun.
So fun. Thank you.
This episode sponsored by Forkful. Most meal delivery services promise healthy food, But look closer, and you'll often find cheap industrial seed oils hiding in the ingredients. Forkful does things differently. Forkful delivers chef-prepared meals made with premium ingredients you'd expect at a great restaurant, from center-cut filet mignon to wild-caught lobster mac and cheese. And every meal is 100% seed oil-free. Instead of canola or soybean oil, Forkful chefs cook with extra virgin olive oil, avocado oil, and grass-fed butter, because better fats make better food. Meals arrive fresh, never frozen, with clear nutrition and ingredient transparency, so you always know exactly what you're eating. Restaurant-quality meals, real ingredients, no seed oils. Discover Forkful today at ForkfulMeals.com.
This episode sponsored by Apollo Neuro.
Having problems getting a good night's sleep? Apollo Neuro may be the help your body needs. Apollo Neuro is a wearable designed to calm your nervous system so you can fall asleep faster and sleep deeper without medication or side effects. It works by sending gentle, silent vibrations through your wrist that signal safety to your body, like a hug for your nervous system. The result? Fewer wake-ups, deeper sleep, and mornings where you actually feel rested. It's not just a sleep tracker. Apollo actively helps you regulate your body, and Smart Vibes AI automatically personalizes the experience for sleep, calm, focus, and recovery. It's scientifically backed, with clinical trial participants gaining up to 60 minutes of sleep a night. Try it risk-free for 30 days. Visit apolloneuro.com/audio and take $99 off today.